This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on Sirius XM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, we give our tribute and we look back at the life and the career of one of the greatest of all time, Terry Funk. And we do it with our host, Tommy Dreamer and Bully Ray. I couldn't think of two better hosts to do this show with me on this day. And we have a couple of tremendous guests for the podcast as well. Mick Foley will join us. Jim Ross will join us. And all full of stories and memories of the great Terry Funk. First and foremost, let me say to both of you, I'm so sorry for your loss, because I know that Terry Funk was more than just a wrestler, but he was a friend. So I'm so sorry to hear about the loss. And let me welcome in Tommy Dreamer and Bully Ray. And, you know, unfortunately, when we do shows like this, you know, it's always hard. But I think over the next 3 hours, we're going to share a lot of great stories, a lot of great memories, and a lot of great moments when it comes to Terry Funk. Good morning, Tommy. Good morning, Bully.
Good morning. This is the hardest show I'll probably ever have to do. Terry was everything for me. And I apologize for being very emotional this show, but this is a hard one. Without Terry Funk, there would be no Tommy Dreamer. It's that simple. He went out of his way for me in ways that it's hard to explain when you talk about a mentor. And it's a reason kind of why I always go out of my way. He saw something in people that I don't know others did. I don't know why he saw that in me. I know it had a lot to do with respect. And, you know, I was able to pick his brain. And, like, you know, I put this on my Facebook page, like, my greatest moments in my career, I shared with him. I fought alongside him. We had yesterday Ivy Nile on, and she talks about when you wrestle with somebody, you get this amazing connection. But then it's like, when you take it to the next level of traveling in a car with somebody, or just, you know, here's this person. And I've said this before, I hated Terry Funk as a performer, because he was so good at his job. I hated him because he beat up my hero, Terry Funk. And then when you get smartened up to the wrestling business, you realize just how great he was. And I truly do love all the posts everybody's posting and pictures that, you know, or little stories they're telling about him. The man, you know, he's a second generation wrestler. He gave his entire life to the wrestling industry. And the fans were the most important thing to him outside of his immediate family, from his wife, Vicky, and his two daughters. And, you know, up until about 3 months ago, I was able to still talk to him. I would talk to him all the time. But back to when, you know, I honestly never thought he would pass away. He was the toughest man I ever was in the ring with. He's the toughest. Like, I saw him do things at my age and older that you cannot possibly, like, I would say to him, this was later on in our conversations, like, how the hell did you do it? And he's like, I did it because I loved it. And it just meant everything to me.
You know, last night on Busted Open After Dark, and before I say what I'm going to say, I just want to thank everybody who tuned in last night and everybody who called in last night. I think the Busted Open family help get each other through the night into this morning for myself, you, Dave, and Tommy to do what we do here on Busted Open. And it hit me after the show about how Terry would have reacted to our sadness and our mourning. Mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, of him. And he would probably be so pissed off. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Come on, guys. Somebody get some heat on me when I'm dead. My body ain't even, my body's still warm. Please, somebody piss on me. Like, seriously, if you knew Terry Funk, that's what he would have wanted. Obviously, we're not doing that, but I even saw a smirk come across Tommy's face because the Funker would want us to use his passing away to get us over. On After Dark, I went out on a limb, Tommy, and I said that I was going to ask you a question this morning. And that question was going to be, if it wasn't for Terry Funk, would there be a Tommy Dreamer? And we have not spoke about this at all. And you started off the show with, if there was no Terry Funk, there would be no Tommy Dreamer. So you answered that question already. Obviously, to guys like myself and Dreamer and Devon and Taz and Shane Douglas and Sabu and Paul Heyman, and the list goes on, and all these ECW guys who got to spend time with Terry Funk in the locker room and remember the first day that he came in and what he meant to the company. Terry Funk gave credibility to a company that lacked it at the time, was just this, you know, dirty pro wrestling company that was acting like the wild, wild west. And here comes Terry Funk and basically said that, you know, I like this company. This is a good company. This is a company that I want to work for. This is a locker room that I want to be a part of. And instantly put us on the map. And I think we will all forever be grateful for that. He was a, you know, a great, you know, as a performer, there was no better. Dave, he's your favorite next to Ric Flair.
Yeah, he's on my Mount Rushmore. It's Ric Flair and then it's Terry Funk.
Last night on After Dark, I tried to tell a couple of stories that I remembered, and I figured that this morning I'd remember some more stories. And one of the stories was when I got to wrestle on WrestleFest, the 50 years of Funk. And that was Funk versus Bret Hart. That was the match that the movie Beyond the Mat was basically built around. And I've told you the story before that when Terry Funk came up to me and he paid me for that show, I was in shock because I couldn't believe that I was actually getting paid to wrestle on this huge event. Terry Funk's like ninth retirement or whatever number of retirement that was. And what I'm holding up right now is the actual check.
That's awesome.
That Terry Funk handed to me in the locker room in Amarillo, Texas. And he thanked me for wrestling on the show, and he thanked me for being there. And I think that's the first time I heard Terry Funk call me friend. And as you can see, this check has never been cashed. I still have the check to this day, signed by Terry Funk, who had immaculate penmanship. As you can see, the account is drawn on Terry and Vicky Funk. And in the bottom left-hand corner, it says WrestleFest. The pay was $400, which is considerably more than young boy Bubba Ray Dudley expected that night, because I expected zero. Never cash this, And 20 years later, when I told him that I had never cashed the check, he looked at me and he said, "You son of a bitch. That's how come I can't balance my checkbook."
This is former UFC champion Chris Weidman. Do you want to feel what it's like to get in the octagon with me? Right now, we are bringing the hardest hitting MMA talk on the planet to your podcast feeds with Won't Back Down, a SiriusXM podcast. Every Monday, I'm speaking my mind and taking you inside combat sports like no one else. Every tap, every snap, and whatever else is on my mind. Download Won't Back Down right now on SiriusXM, Stitcher, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Won't Back Down.
You know, we've been sharing our memories and our favorite moments of Terry Funk. Somebody that we're going to bring in now, legend himself, Hall of Famer. Let's bring in Mick Foley. Mick, good morning, and so sorry for your loss.
He was our favorite wrestler, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand it, like all of us, right? We represent what almost 90 years, 85 years of experience, at least 80 between the three of us. And we've all come to the conclusion that in all our years, Terry was the best guy we ever saw. It was that combination of, you know, his ability, his crowd psychology, his promos, and his ability to be in the zone every single time I saw him. And I had the privilege of writing the foreword to Terry's book. And I think I said in it, that the only person I saw who seemed to be in the zone every single night was Terry and Ric Flair. There was no occasion too small to give his very best. No occasion too small to raise someone else's stature during the course of a match. And I saw him tear down the house on many occasions when we worked for IWA Japan, when the house shows were pretty sparsely attended and you would never know it. As a matter of fact, the match I'm proudest of in January 1995 was against Terry, and then it was in front of 150 people, and we did everything we could to put that little promotion on the map.
Mick, do you remember the first time, the first day, the first night that you ever met Terry?
Yeah, well, specifically, different conversations. The first real defining moment for me was when I somehow scored an invitation to Ric Flair's 42nd birthday. It was the night that it was following the match where he and Lex Luger tore it down in Greensboro. And so Ric had a big suite at the top of a really nice hotel. And I was talking with Terry, and Dennis Brent came over. Dennis Brent was a photographer and writer for the WCW magazine. He said, "You know, Terry, is the reason that you are always giving Mick advice, is that because you see a little bit of yourself in him?" And Terry looked at Dennis and said, "I don't see shit in him." I'm allowed to curse on XM, right?
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, I know I'd met him on a handful of occasions before that, but that to me was like the solidifier. And he gave me only the way that Terry could. He spoke almost in parables, and he was reflecting on my match that night with Norman the Lunatic. And he shared some hard truths with me about that. He shared a story about the devil and the angel saying, "Don't you understand? Without him, there's no me." And he said, "Norman was that angel. Tonight, you've got to find a way to bring out that devil in you." And then he said, "Cactus, all these bumps you take, they're not going to mean anything unless you can find a way to," he was telling me, like, I had to work on my heat. I had to find a way to become more aggressive in order for the things that I did do well to mean more. So that was the first prominent, meeting that I remember.
Cactus, I don't know if you know this or if I ever told you this story.
This is awesome.
But the first time that I ever interacted with Terry was in the ECW arena in late 1995, the evening of the flaming chair incident. And when Terry came back through the curtain and he was looking for you, and he was yelling and screaming and going crazy as a 402-pound young boy. I scurried for the back of the ECW arena, the back of the locker room, as we all remember it. And I found a 6-foot-tall fan, one of those giant industrial fans. And I tried to hide behind it because I was so terrified by what I was seeing. And as Terry made his way through the locker room, yelling and screaming and looking for you, he finally walks towards the back of the dressing room. And I'm the only person there between him and the door that led to all the floats in the back of the arena.
Right.
And I come out from behind the fan as if he couldn't see me anyway. Right. And I'm like, "Are you okay, sir?" And he smacks me across the face. "Who the hell are you? I'm fine. Don't you know who I am? I'm the fucker. Get out of my way." And he walks away. And I just remember holding my jaw and my cheek. And at that point saying, "This is the highlight of my career." I just got smacked in the face by Terry Funk. So thank you for lighting him on fire.
I described it when I came back there. He was throwing furniture of astonishing size. Like, it looked like something Braun Strowman might be able to pull off. And Terry was throwing that. And it was just heartbreaking for me because he was my hero. And I'd set him on fire. And you know what? This is actually one of my favorite stories because, keep in mind, this is 95. The cell phones may have been out, but I didn't have one. And I remember driving back to Long Island just forlorn. And I was thinking, I will never wrestle again. And by the time I got to Long Island, I changed it to, I will never wrestle in the United States again. And Colette and I went out the next day to the east end of Long Island. She was trying to like just assuage the hurt I felt. And when I got back, it was the old school answering machine, you know, and I pressed the answer machine and I hear this voice. "Cactus, this is Terry Funk, and I just want to say that I was a fool last night. I was a damn fool, but we sure gave them something to talk." And I just, I'm getting the tingles right now just talking about it because I'm sorry I slapped you, but keep in mind that people would line up for hours in Japan to be slapped by Inoki, right? And
yep.
You didn't have to wait at all.
And I got it for free.
Hey, one of my first times meeting Terry, he's wrestling in ECW. And of course, he's the legend, Terry Funk. And he's in this match. And it was just like a hodgepodge of a match. It was like him, Road Warrior Hawk, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and like King Kong Bundy. And he comes in the back. Again, livid and like, you know, wild and crazy. And like what Bully described and like what you described, we're all these tough wrestlers. Yeah. And there's photographers and there's people who are supposed to be in the back. And the back then was a sanctuary. And he comes back there like how Bruiser Brody is coming through the crowd in Japan.
Right.
And locker rooms of people are scurrying to get out of his way. And he's cursing. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, there was a car back there and not a car, like a fake car, like because we had the floats and everything.
Right.
And he went under, like got on his belly and went under the car and was screaming, like going crazy. Right. And I'm like, what is this man doing? You fast forward to like last year where I'm reading the original Sheik's book that Brian Solomon wrote and. Sheik didn't want to get into the ring with, I believe it was Lou Thesz, because he was afraid he was going to get stretched and get exposed.
Right.
He went out in the snow and hid under a car, and it made national news and got him in the newspaper. And I was just like, and when I go, "Terry, you stole what the Sheik did back then." He goes, "Maybe Sheik stole it from me." But he just did that, like, working us all just to try to get more of an oomph out of a match that wasn't so much had a lot of oomph.
Yeah. And that was at a time when ECW was still trying to figure out what it was going to be. And they were just throwing a lot of stuff at the wall, not all of it. not all of it worked, but without Terry, is it safe to say ECW would not have been ECW without Terry?
Absolutely.
We were talking about it earlier.
Yeah. I mean, when Paulie was putting that together, and I think Terry started when, you know, he was there under Eddie Gilbert's booking, because he cut that famous horse promo with the tail end of a horse, as if he was cutting a promo on Eddie Gilbert. But when Paul took over and he realized he needed one guy to help make other guys, and the thing is, he wasn't going through the motions. He could have. No one would have thought less of him if he had gone through the motions. And he never went through the motions. He always gave you the best match he could. And the reason I explained in the foreword I wrote for his book why I would put him above anyone else, you know, at the very top of my Mount Rushmore, is that he made it so easy to suspend disbelief, right? Like, so it sounds to me he was legit upset. He was a little upset with me after I set him on fire in ECW, but he was working the other time. He was working to try to generate interest and heat and you suspended disbelief. I remember being in a ring for an independent show from Mike O'Brien or Mike Lombardi, also Eastern Championship, but not Eastern, in Northeast Championship Wrestling. Really good promoter. And not everyone knew who Terry was. He was going to be in, I was going to be in Lawler's corner. He was going to be in Man Scout's corner. But by the time he got to the ring, even if these younger fans did not know who he was, they knew he was not someone to be messed with. And I was saying to the ring announcer, I go, "You better get out of the ring." He goes, "What?" I go, "You better get out of the ring." He goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "You better get out of the ring." And he goes, "But I'm the ring announcer." And the first thing Terry does, I bail out because I don't want to get, but here comes that big left hand. Boom. Backstage, the guy's got a... He's got a nice back on his head. He goes, "I can't believe he hit me." And I look at him, I said, "What part of you better get out of the ring did you not understand?" So he had that ability and he brought it every night and he shared his knowledge. He understood that by making other people, he was creating his own competition. And he was like all of the best. He was good with that.
You know, we just heard an interview from him and this was 7 years ago and I'm saying, and he's saying he's in his 70s. And like, I'm like, wait, he was wrestling for me when he was in his late 60s, early 70s. And I was just like, I can't imagine. Cause I mean, we all know how we feel some days, you know, what Terry Funk would feel like. There's days today where, you know, I'm like, when I'm on a plane and my knees are killing me and I wasn't doing moonsaults to the crowd, but when you were wrestling with him in the WWE, like you guys won the tag titles. He was 54 years old.
Yeah.
And like, again, I'll never forget that image of that bruise from when you guys got dumped in the dumpster.
Yeah. When Billy, it was nobody's fault, but Terry clipped his lower back when he was being powerbombed into the dumpster. This is a sentence that only makes sense in professional wrestling. And I mean, you talk about a hematoma. It was like a football on his back. And I remember Road Dogg saying, and he wasn't knocking Steve. He looked at the monitor. He goes, "I don't care what they say." Talking about the announcer, he goes, "That's the toughest SOB I've ever seen." And I do, you know, the only couple that night, I had to take most of the beating from DX. That was the reformation of the expansion of the most famous DX lineup with X-Pac and Billy and Road Dogg and Hunter and China. That night and also one night when we did a house show in ECW, showed me his MRIs, and it was just the worst MRI. You couldn't dream up a worse looking MRI. "Cactus, I don't know how much I'll be able to do." And when we got out there, do you think that was an issue?
Nope.
Yeah. There was no such thing as a night off. He would be in extreme pain going into a match. He'd be extreme pain when he came back. But brother, when he was out there, you would never know it.
If you talk about toughness, he got kicked by a horse on live pay-per-view and continued the match. I mean, that has literally killed people, but Terry goes out there and finishes the match. And when I asked him about it, he was like, I felt so bad. That was my horse. I spooked it. I felt horrible. I felt terrible. And I was like, the horse kicked you.
Cactus. Yep. Another one of my favorite Terry stories is that he was, he just kind of randomly mentioned that he was stabbed by a fan in Corpus Christi. I was stabbed by a fan here. And I said, really? Did you press charges? And he wheeled around and looked me in the eye and said, what did you say? I said, did you press charges? He goes, Cactus, how could I press charges when that fan was giving me the biggest compliment he possibly could? He hated me enough to try to kill me. And that's who he was. A stab Amazing. Wound is a badge of honor.
Amazing. Cactus, with the resurgence of deathmatch wrestling over the past 5 years, did you ever get a chance to talk to Terry about what it is, deathmatch wrestling is today? Or do you know how he felt about it with you and Terry and Onita, basically the kings of the deathmatch, in Japan, guys, yeah. Performers who incorporated psychology into deathmatch wrestling, which is truly where it's at, for me. Lack of psychology these days in deathmatch wrestling. Did Terry have an opinion on it? Did you speak to him? And what do you think he would have thought of it?
Yeah, not that I recall. The past, 5 years, he'd been declining. And I was so fortunate that the last time I saw him, his daughters described it as a good day. He had family and friends around him. And somebody sent me a video, not just a photo, but a little video of the two of us watching the finals of the IWA King of the Deathmatch tournament. So it was getting tougher to have those type of conversations. So I don't recall. I think he'd be okay. Same thing, as long as there's some psychology. And there were nights in Japan where psychology just went out the window because you're in a small crowd. You might not, my favorite match with Terry was one where I didn't see him, let alone have a chance to talk to him. And so sometimes you're out there, not this wasn't the case with Terry, but a couple of the guys, you'd have a main event death match and you'd have no chance to talk to them, no chance to see them. There's 120 people out there and they're getting color in the first 8 seconds of the match before you incorporate any of the death match elements. It was almost considered, I talk about the badge of honor, whereas when you get the color in the U.S., it's considered your point of pride for no one to see it. Whereas in Japan, it was like they wanted everyone to know. They come up after 30 seconds, all the photographers are on them, and come up with the blood and the crowd. Ooh. And at that point, all right, this, I'm just trying to get out of here. I'm okay with a good, I just want to have a good match. I just want to have a solid match. I want to give people some oohs and ahs, but there's absolutely no psychology to it. I think, so with that being said, you always want to have some psychology in your death matches. And I don't watch it enough to really remark on it. I know it's out there and it's thriving and there its own little community, which is great. There should be something for everyone. And there certainly was something for those fans of Japan and fans in the US who liked that back when I was doing it. I think he'd be okay with it. I don't think he wants people doing foolish things, but to me, an untrained guy attempting a German or anything that turns you upside down and drops you on your head is going to be more of an issue structurally and every other way physically than some of the dumber things that are done in deathmatch wrestling. I know someone will quote me on that and disagree, but that's just my feeling after being around this stuff for, close to 40 years.
Do you have a favorite Terry Funk? Anything?
I did the Nice Day Tour. It started before the pandemic and then, we had to pause that year. And I'm actually doing three more Nice Day shows. The last of which is just simply so my wife can see it because there's some cool stuff about her in there. But every night, in the same way the tour before it, the highlight of that tour was when I got to do my Dusty story. It's because doing the Dusty imitation made me happy. And therefore, if I'm happy, I feel like that's going to be transferred to the audience. My favorite story was about having that big match in January in front of the 150 fans with Terry. And this is the one where we couldn't talk, couldn't see each other, but we knew we had to tear it down because the media was there. And for people out there who don't understand the importance of the Japanese media, like in the age before the internet, like that was our TV. We would see the photographers there at Korakuen and say, oh, TV tonight. So in this case, they had traveled to the little prefecture of Guma, I believe it was, on January 10th. And we have it's probably the most difficult match I've ever had. 17 minutes of, you know, just relentlessness. And when it's over, I get ready to breathe that deep sigh of relief. The 150 fans mob around Terry. And then I hear this voice that goes, Cactus. I didn't react. I didn't know how to react. Goes, Cactus. It sounds like a ghost in the wind. And he starts yelling out the word the same way he said forever, forever. He's yelling out repeatedly, respect, respect. And I start crawling towards Terry. This was a night where I nearly lost both pinkies. Not if I didn't nearly lose them. They were grievously injured. Everywhere I go, I'm leaving this little trail of blood. And we get to each other. We pull each other up. We use each other's bodies for support. And we lay in the big hug, and the crowd just responds as one, as they do in Japan. And I'm thinking, this is the best ending to a match I've ever had. And then he whispers in my ear, pile drive me. I said, what? Pile drive me, Cactus. And I, what am I going to do? It's Terry Funk. It doesn't matter that I think this is the best ending of a match. He's called a new one. So I pushed him away, gave him the boot, turned him upside down, dropped him on his head, you know, safely. And I remember that crowd all turning on me in unison. And I just thought that was my favorite. You know, he was still looking to get every little bit out of that match as he could. And our goal was to set that little promotion, build a foundation on which that little promotion could grow. And that's what we did that night.
Cactus, one last question from me. How do you think Terry Funk would have wanted to be remembered?
Oh, man. You know, he told me that hardcore was not about chairs and tables and ladders and barbed wire. It was about going above and beyond to give fans their money's worth and more. And I think he is the ultimate hardcore wrestler because he went further above and farther beyond than anyone I've ever heard of, met, in order to give fans the best show possible. And I think that's how he should be remembered.
Hi, everybody. Christopher Mad Dog Russo here. Familiar? You should be. Well, now you can catch Mad Dog's Daily Bite each day as a podcast where you'll hear my thoughts and opinions on the biggest topics around the world of sports. NFL, baseball, golf, NBA, even the hockey. That you know you can count on. That's Mad Dog's Daily Bite. Drops daily anywhere you get your podcasts. And you can also hear me weekdays 3 to 6 Eastern on Mad Dog Unleashed, Sirius XM Channel 82, or anytime on the SXM app.
Joining us right now is, to me, the greatest voice in the history of pro wrestling and somebody I know that knows Terry Funk very well, and that is Hall of Famer Jim Ross joins us right now. Sir, thank you so much for the time. I know it's a difficult day, but really appreciate you taking the time to join us this morning.
Anytime for you guys. I appreciate it. I love the show.
You got a little shot coming up in London, JR?
Yeah, I got a booking, Bubba.
Do a little bit of a house, sir.
Yeah, I heard there's going to be a few folks there.
I love it.
Should be fun, fellas, for an old timer like me. I don't have any more trips to London I got in me, but nonetheless, I'm going to make the most of this one.
Jim, when I was introducing you, I always say, you know, the greatest voice in the history of this sport. And, you know, when the first thing I think of when I think of you, when I think of Terry Funk, when I think of Ric Flair, I think of the I Quit match in Troy, New York between Terry Funk and Ric Flair. You were on the call along with Gordon Solie. To me, that's the greatest match of all time, and you're a big reason for it. Obviously, Terry Funk as well. Any memories of that night and that match?
Well, yeah, you know, keeping Gordon sober was a challenge. But nonetheless, I knew that when we did it. You know, it was my idea to use Gordon because, you know, Gordon had kind of been ignored and not respected, I didn't think, by WCW management. But nonetheless, it was fun. We didn't know what to expect. You know, it wasn't one of those deals where those guys sat around all day and worked out what they were going to do. It was all by feel, instincts. And that was one of Terry's greatest attributes. He had amazing instincts. And he was always willing to help somebody. I always thought that was one of the greatest traits he had. It was great in the locker room because he was so pro wrestling. Terry Funk was as much pro wrestling as anybody I ever met. He was like family to me. And we talked all the time. Rafael Morphy was telling me at breakfast this morning that he was at my place in Florida. My phone rang and it was Terry. We talked for 40 minutes about nothing. And Rafael was so entertained, because Terry was, I had him on the speakerphone, and he was just absolutely hilarious. I love the guy. We had so much fun together, and I learned so much from Terry Funk. He was just a wonderful human being, and he's going to be, he can't be replaced. There'll never be another guy like him in my book. He's on that Mount Rushmore, in my opinion, anyway.
JR, you talked about the great instincts of Terry Funk. Jerry Lawler, who's one of the greatest workers of all time, has gone on record to say that he believed that Terry Funk was the greatest worker of all time. Do you share that sentiment?
Yeah, that's hard to quantify, but yeah, I couldn't say no to that one. I've never been around anybody that had the instincts. He could read a crowd on his way to the ring. He just had that feel, that intangible feel for pro wrestling. He loved it. He was committed to it. It was his life. And some of us that were around Terry in a pretty much a regular basis back in those days, late 80s, 89 was a good year for Terry because he had those matches with Rick. And the match you mentioned there with the I Quit match was certainly one of my favorite matches of all time. And next year I'll be in the business 50 years, and I have never had an experience better. And that I Quit match, it was just perfect storytelling. Had a logical conclusion. They were physical. Terry and Rick beat the hell out of each other, which I got off on. And as long as it was somebody else, I could describe it. I just didn't want to experience it. But those guys were they were amazing. That match was a classic. If you have never seen it, folks, find it and watch it. New York Knockout. It was just a simply a fantastic main event, and they delivered. Terry always delivered, no matter who it was, promos or whatever. The great thing about Terry was that I've been listening to some of the bites you guys played. You know, that's all ad lib. He didn't write down a promo. They didn't have meetings to talk about a promo. You say this, I'll say that, then you react. Nothing. It's just natural. And that was his gift. He's a natural performer who loved pro wrestling. And he will never be replaced. He'll always be missed. And I loved him like family. I really did. He helped me so much. And when I got to hire him in WWE, it was a joy. I felt like I was doing something good for wrestling to get Terry Funk back on a national television basis.
Yeah, JR, when was the first time you met Terry?
Early 70s. Wow. He headlined the first. I think Terry headlined the first Superdome event. He and Cowboy were on top. Surprise, surprise! And the finish was a blood stoppage. Watts was bleeding too much. The referee stopped the match. But that's when I met Terry. And then he came in as a bounty hunter. And they did the old bounty hunter gimmick here and there. So he was a bounty hunter against Ken Mantell, and Kenny was the object of the bounty. So that's when I met him. And then he'd come back and do those bounty hunter shots and what have you. He was just a joy to be around, man. He lit up the locker room like you guys are telling. All those stories are from you guys' heart, and that means a lot to me to hear. So when I heard the news, I just was in disbelief, even though I knew the end was somewhat near a week or two ago. So it was just a great experience. I'm very blessed I got to work with Terry. I'm very blessed I could call him one of my best friends in wrestling. And I can also admit that I'm heartbroken.
JR, you talked about how you had brought Terry into the WWF, you know, with the whole Chainsaw Charlie gimmick. You had been around to see so many legendary acts have Vince McMahon put his spin on them. You saw what he did with the Road Warriors. You saw what he did with Dusty Rhodes, even Flair to an extent. How did you feel about the Chainsaw Charlie character? And did Terry enjoy it as much as he seemed to enjoy it?
Terry loved reinventing himself. And it takes courage for an established wrestler to be willing to change their gimmick, so to speak, or their presentation. Not Terry. He looked at it as a challenge. And I think he had fun doing it. That was my estimation of it. You know, he is all an experimentation. He didn't know how it was going to get over. He wasn't really worried about it because he knew his instincts would help get everything over. And it did. So he was fun to be around, and it got him a run, and he earned some paydays, and it got him back in the national scene, which I thought was well past due. So, you know, things like that. And somebody said, "What was one of your favorite moments?" Well, one of my favorite moments was hiring Terry Funk, and then he became Chainsaw Charlie. So I was just so blessed to be there in that position to be able to help him out. And then he was such an asset in the locker room. As you guys said, I'm sure he's taught each and every one of us that are talking here today on your show. He's done something great for us in our profession. Advice, an idea, things of that nature. He was always willing to help talents, no matter if they were the top guys or they were just getting started.
You know, JR, thankfully, I was able to interview Terry Funk. I've met him a few times. Obviously, I didn't have the relationship that everyone here on this show had with Terry Funk, but it was hard not to get emotional earlier when Beulah was talking about the song Desperado and the Eagles and how she's going to see the Eagles in concert. And they're on their final tour before they finally say goodbye. And it just feels like, you know, in the world of pro wrestling, we're saying goodbye a lot. And eras change, times change, and it's difficult to let go. It's difficult to say goodbye. And I know that you're a big fan of that band as well. And I'm sure every time you hear that song, Desperado, immediately you're going to be thinking of Terry Funk.
Yeah, you know, well, I'm a big Eagles mark, so it worked for me in all fronts, several fronts. But yeah, you know, that was his signature. That was his music. His music told a story, just like Terry told stories. So it's perfect music for a guy that I really consider the last outlaw. He's just an amazing human being, fellas, I'm telling you. And we're all lucky we got to know him. We're all lucky we got to work with him. We're all lucky we got to call him a friend. Because once you're a friend of Terry Funk's, you're in with him. He was loyal, you know, no games. Just was a super, super human being. I remember one time going, we were in Chicago, riding in a car. Terry was driving. It might have been Chris Cruz driving, I'm not sure. Somebody had a joint. And seeing Terry Funk get a buzz off a joint, and then hearing his act, so to speak, he'd start talking and laughing and telling stories. Shivani, me, Chris Cruz, and Terry. One joint. And it was, I know it sounds childish, and maybe even a little coarse for some people, but he was just a tremendous, he was hilarious. And so little things like that I remember. You know, smoking a joint with Terry Funk was one of my favorite memories, quite frankly. So it just, little things like that just stick out with me. And, you know, he's just so creative. The stuff he did with Flair build his heat for the that New York knockout event was fascinating. It was a master's class in how do you build an angle and what do you say. And what I've always been amazed with, what I mentioned there, alluded to anyway, he didn't write down his promos. He just did them from his heart, from his gut. He had a string or a theme, and he married it. He laid with it. He cultivated it, and he delivered every single time.
JR, a fan had asked me, sorry, Tommy, a fan had asked me last night about, you know, my favorite, you know, Terry Funk match. And I talked about a favorite Terry Funk moment. And that moment was when Terry Funk pile drove Ric Flair onto the table. Obviously, that left a lasting impression on me and how my career and Devon's career had advanced. When you had seen that, was that shocking to you? Had you ever seen that done before? Did you find it innovative? Do you remember how you felt when you saw Funk pile drive Flair on the table?
Well, I was in shock because I don't think that spot was big time planned. I think it was an audible call by Terry, because Rick's body English and his facial expressions told me or sent me a message that this was not on the quote unquote script. It was an ad lib. And I was shocked by it. I thought, well, there's no way that this can be safely executed. And all of a sudden we're putting Flair in this amazing jeopardy and danger. But boy, it got over, and I'd never seen anything like it. Now, in today's world, where sensationalism is seemingly the way of professional wrestling life, it might not sound like a big deal. But when you'd never seen it before, when it's brand new, and Terry got on that table with Nate, it was absolutely shocking. Because again, I didn't. How in the hell are you guys going to pull this off? And of course, as normal Terry Funk style, he did it his way, and he did it well, and it's something I'm never going to forget.
When you talk about reinventing yourself, I had totally forgotten until you mentioned the car ride about Terry being a commentator. He had his own, like, Piper's Pit. I forgot what it was called. But then also, like, he would host and open up the other shows and then be a commentator. Did you work with him as well doing that?
Yeah, he was great. He was natural.
Yeah.
There was nothing in pro wrestling, guys, from promoting. If you needed to put the ring up, he could handle that. I don't think that ever occurred, but if it did, you knew he was going to come through. But yeah, he was just multi-talented. There was nothing in pro wrestling that Terry Funk could not do successfully and do it better than anybody else. At least that's my take on it. And I know we're all emotional about this, but if he's not on the Mount Rushmore, then you need to recess your GPS and get back to that mountain where he belongs.
JR, I want to thank you for taking the time. I know this is a busy week for you as well, and I hope you're feeling well. We're always thinking about you. We love you, and have fun this weekend, JR.
Well, I had a good week. My MRI was negative, meaning I don't have any bone cancer in my tibia, which was a big relief. I can't tell you guys the sleepless nights I've had in the last week or two waiting on the results. And I finally got them. It's good news. No bone cancer. I'm moving on. So at 71, I know my time is limited. I get it. Nobody's got to remind me. It's time for JR to quit. JR, I'll let you know when it's time to quit.
Damn right.
I'm going to go out my way the best I can. And that's hopefully doing great work and telling stories and getting these guys over.
Amen.
We knew that this was going to be a show that was going to go fast just because there's so much to talk about when it comes to Terry Funk.
For me, the show was healing. Thank you, Nation. I miss him. But I haven't been. I cried myself to sleep. I was dreading this show. I didn't cry this entire show, but I also know it's coming to an end. If there was ever a person who deserved two tribute days, it would be Terry Funk. And I want everybody to enjoy Wembley, and one day I'll tell you the story of how Tony Khan almost had me and Terry Funk for one last moment with Eddie Kingston and John Moxley, and he did that because he was a wrestling fan, and it was happening, except Terry couldn't get on a plane, and we tried so hard. So everybody please enjoy Wembley, because Terry Funk loved this industry, and he loved this business, and he loved all of you. You have no clue how many times he told me to tell hello to you, and he missed you, and he missed performing in front of you. So that's all I got. Thank you.
I'm going to post a video later of the last promo that Terry Funk ever cut for wrestling fans, and it happened in December at the ECW Arena. I made a phone call to Terry and I asked him to please film something for us. And he did. And it aired in the arena. And for me, it was full circle for Terry Funk and my relationship with him to hear him talk to the ECW fans in the ECW arena. And the last thing that Terry says in that promo was, "Devon, get the tables."
Wow.
And I have that video, and I'm going to share it with all of you. Terry, thank you very much for everything that you ever did for me, my brother Devon, for ECW, for the wrestling business, for wrestling fans. I will love you forever, my friend.
Forever.
Busted Open is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Catch the full 3 hours of Busted Open Monday through Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Foundation, channel 156. Go to SiriusXM.com/BustedOpenTrial to start your free trial today.